Someone asked me recently, what is the job of the guru? What is the job of the guru? According to me, the job of the guru is to reintroduce you to the unmanifest while living in the manifestation. So if the guru brings you peace, which is the absence of the thinking mind, which is a reintroduction to the silence, that means the guru is pushing you into the unmanifest, yet not making you a vegetable, making you function in this world while not being lost in it, not being lost in the Maya. So when the pointers are constantly on the silence of the mind, on the peace of deep sleep, they are basically pointing to the annihilation of the ego with its sense of doership. Maya is the me. And by constantly pointing to all there is the will of God, nobody is the doer of their actions, and so on and so forth, it is smashing the legs of the ego and making it merge into silence. When that starts happening, it is the qualities of the self that start manifesting. Equanimity, calm, as opposed to agitation, noise, and so on and so forth. So while one's life earlier was ruled by mental chatter, mental noise, disruption of peace, anxiety, stress, worry, now those attributes take the backseat. They may emerge now and then because that is the nature of our conditioning, but they go more and more into the distance. We find that our feathers are ruffled less and less as time goes by. Things which upset us 2 years ago don't upset us now. So we know that we have started resting in that quality of the self. People we used to blame and hate earlier, we don't blame and hate now. Which basically means the content of our consciousness has been transformed. The data which was embedded in our consciousness is being rewritten, so to speak. Earlier, the data of separation, me versus the world, me versus you, me against you. Now, when that me is exposed to be hollow, there's nothing to be against. Because to be against anything is to be against the oneself. Normally, our lives are in opposition. Either an opposition to what people have done to us, and if that's not enough, then what God has done to us. We oppose it. And this is how we live all our lives. Rather than accepting the divine decree, we oppose it. And our battle with life is constant. That is why when Joel Goldsmith said, lay your sword down, he didn't mean to be helpless or to give up. What he meant was, stop battling all the time. Because if you want to battle all the time, there will be no shortage of battles which will be presented to you to fight. And we love battles so much that if we have no one else to battle with, we will battle with ourselves. As long as there's a battle, there must be someone to play with. So now I'm happy because I'm busy battling. And nobody fights a battle in order to lose. The hope is that I will win. So I'm invested in the future outcome of the battle, which is what Krishna pointed out to Arjuna. That you don't need to carry the burden of the future of this battle because I, as time, have already killed them. It's really not up to you. But we, the more battles we are engaged in, proves to us how much in the future we are invested in. And imagine all your investments are in the future and you don't wake up tomorrow. What happens to those future scenarios now? Therefore, peace can only be found now. Not in the future, certainly not in the past. One may say, oh, life was so peaceful earlier, now I'm troubled. Maybe you were blessed with peaceful times earlier, But does it mean you have a right to peaceful times in the future? Who is demanding that right? We don't know the hand of destiny, whose future, whose past was loaded with what. Everyone comes with their own script. But now we have something to compare, a peaceful past and an unpleasant present. And so we start living in the past peace, thinking about those good old days, not willing to face the present. So again, the ego has gone back into the past, running away from the present. And so it starts getting delusional, avoiding, bypassing. It has many tricks up its sleeve. And so it meets the present in the past. So when the Guru starts pointing out all these things, the transient nature of life, that pleasure and pain are movements which we cannot control. Life is about pleasure, life is about pain. That understanding is pulling the ego out of the Maya, what it was sucked in, and slowly, 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 slowly becoming the witness of its life, witness consciousness. Not being too quick to judge people or judge events, facing them as part of the prarabdha karma, knowing that every pleasure that comes my way will disappear one day, and hopefully every pain that comes my way will also disappear. Because it has learnt its lessons, that this is the nature of life. Because life is duality. Duality of every conceivable kind. If there is one person in my life who upsets me, there is someone else who does not upset me. But my focus goes on to the one who has upset me. Because I demand that nobody should upset me. So if I have five friends and one upsets me, all my missiles are now trained on the one who upset me. You see how it works? We are so obsessed that the world should not hurt us because we are entitled. So when these realizations start happening, we stop wanting people to change, wanting them to be other than how God has made them. Yes, a situation may be unpleasant. Nobody wants it. But we turn around and face it till we are meant to face it. Rather than complaining, cribbing, judging, telling others about the situation we are in and therefore giving it more and more strength because we want pity from others. So we repeat our story, pulling down others in subtle ways because we must not appear to be mean people. So when all these games are given up and we find that through the light of understanding, we are no longer embroiled in this drama of life. We are going into, you could call the unmanifest, the silence. We are approaching things in silence and not pushing back as the ego. So even if someone says something to us which we don't like, we meet it in silence. It is a sadhana worth practicing. That one person who's troubling you, just meet them in silence. Rather than being too quick to give it back to them. Not only meet it in silence, but in your own mind, take what they are saying and deliver it to God. The ego wants to take delivery, but tell yourself, they are not telling it to me, they are telling it to God. What have I got to do with it? It's not an easy sadhana. The enlightened being has to be on guard also, that no negative thought must come up about anyone. Because if it does, it can have a serious impact on that person. Because to wish harm upon anyone is to wish harm upon God. Now we wish harm in our consciousness upon many people, thinking that just because we don't say it on their face, we are okay. But the problem with that is the content of our consciousness is full of this garbage, full of the word harm. We feel we are safe. Because nobody else knows. But we are fooling ourselves. Because the content of our consciousness is harm, 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 harm. That is the vibration which we are carrying. And like attracts like. That is the law. Like attracts like. Then we wonder, how come we are being harmed? We have not done anything wrong. We've never uttered a mean word to anyone. And by and by, when we let go of all these concepts, as the saying goes, let go and let God do the rest. When we don't hold on to our pains, we let it go. We find the world has lost its grip on us because the world is here to make you react till you keep reacting. When you stop reacting, what is left? React means that only. React. We are reacting all the time. And there are two excellent pointers as far as the ego is concerned. One is taking instead of giving, and the other is wanting to be loved instead of loving. See, the ego loves to take. It loves to take a compliment. It loves to take a gift. It loves to take what does not belong to it. Ego loves to take, doesn't love to give. Giving does not come naturally to the ego, which is immersed in me and mine. Because when it gives, it feels it is diminished. It is losing something. But when the realization is, it was not yours in the first place, what is there to lose? If the ego has 1,000 rupees in the pocket, giving that 100 rupees will pinch, because I am giving away 100 out of 1,000 rupees in my pocket, 10%. But who put that 1,000 rupees in your pocket? If you worked hard, who gave you the skills to work hard? Who gave you the aptitude to work hard? Where did that money come from? Somewhere else. So is it really your money? So why should it pinch you so much to give it away? More importantly, if you realize that your giving away appears to be giving to someone else, but you're simply giving to the one self, where would the hesitation be? See, the ego wants the harvest without sowing the seed. But the law of nature is you have to put the seed in the ground first, then only will the harvest come. How can you not put the seed first? Isn't it absurd? You have to put the seed in the ground, in the soil, then you get the harvest. So giving comes, even according to the laws of nature, before receiving. You have to put in effort and you earn money. But nowadays we don't want to put the effort in, we want to just earn the money. So giving means the consciousnesses of giving, not taking. And Goldsmith gave a wonderful example of this, that the fruits on a tree, if someone has no idea about fruits and trees and sees one, they will think the fruits have been stuck onto the tree. They cannot imagine that the tree is producing these fruit. They don't have a reference. But the tree is governed by the law of supply. Its nature is to give and it bears fruit. So it is within. It is not attaching fruits from outside. What we want is a consciousness of lack, and then we want things. And we want to be loved. Whereas the nature of consciousness is to be loving. Very hard to understand this part. The child is equally loving to everyone because the consciousness, the ego, is not developed yet. The sense of separation, the child is not saying, this person looks ugly, that one looks pretty, so I'll run to that one. Because the consciousness has not even evolved to that sense of separation and judgment. It is pure being reacting to pure being. But this adult consciousness has started creating these barriers, distortions, that I don't like this person because of this personality trait. That person I like because, they are nice to me. Child does not think like this. And so, because I want to be acknowledged, I want to feel like I'm the center of the universe, I want to be loved. So all attempts are made to be loved. The universe must love me because then I know who I am. This is me. Oh, nobody loves me. So sad. It feels very bad. Nobody loves me. But the law of supply is to give first and then receive. That's why Lester Levin said it is hard work to be wanting to be loved. It's much easier to be loving. Wanting to be loved is hard work. When you accept people the way God has made them, you automatically become loving. It doesn't need to be done. Loving people does not need to be done. Just accepting this variety of people seeing that they are who they are based on their life's experiences. What twists and turns their life has taken, we don't know. It is how it is. Just like my own life has taken its twists and turns. So when we see that no one is really deliberately being who they are, but just playing out a divine script, then qualities like compassion and love start emerging. When all these qualities start emerging, you know that you have now one foot back in the silence, in the unmanifest. Because words like hate, condemnation, blame are no longer in your vocabulary. They have dissolved like mist, ill will, spite, malice. Then the realization happens. I am that. Those big words, I am that, which basically means I am not this ego mired in the samsara and in the maya, which I thought I was. I am that consciousness, which is the witness of whatever transpires in life and functions through everyone. Those who have loved me, those who have troubled me. That one source consciousness is who I am and who each and every character in my life is also. Then I am living Advaita, not two. Which basically means even Brahman and Parabrahman are not two. Appears as two, multiplicity, me and you, but not two. Then I start rising above what Goldsmith called the pairs of opposites. So far I've been living within the pairs of opposites. Pleasure and pain, love and hate, rich and poor, health and sickness, whatever it may be. Just going boom, 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 boom through life. Now I have a bird's eye view because I am seeing this grid of duality functioning. I am pulled back from it and can see now that the nature of life is duality. If I have seen that, there's nothing else to be done. I still have to live out the rest of my life. I will still face challenges if I'm meant to face them. I will do my best, knowing that the results are not in my control. Even the sage has to live out his or her life, has to take decisions, knowing that some may yield good results, some may not. That is the human experience. But when we start living this way, we are no longer reincarnating into old patterns and situations like we used to, because those lessons have been learned. So we allow God, the source consciousness, to take over and run our lives. Would anyone like to share anything or ask anything? You're the aerospace PhD. You were in Chennai, right?
Yeah. But I'm actually here. I had come that time in Chennai.
You're
in
IIT, no?
Yes.
What is your name?
Ram Kumar. So,
like, what does an aerospace PhD find appealing here, I'd like to ask?
It is just a... It's in everyday living. It's our reality.
Yes.
So.
Absolutely.
It's our reality. And... whether we accept it or not, that is what our core is. It's only when the mind slows down, we are able to feel it. That's the... And so my question was about people who are not on this path and they are undergoing a lot of difficulties. Their mind is totally out of control, such that they don't have the capacity to feel this wisdom, such that it feels superficial. They are not able to feel it. It's just like an intellectual understanding. Nor do they have any specific inclination towards an Ishta Devata or Bhakti in that sense. So what is the means we can pray? I know that I can pray for them, but what is the means for them to snap this out of control mind and feel this inner awareness, pure awareness of silence within? What is the means, easiest means for them?
See, the intention is a noble intention because one does not want to see anyone suffer. And this is suffering ignorance, you see. Now, all you can do is try. But don't force themselves, force them to see another point of view. It doesn't work because the ego does not like being told. See, Ramana Maharshi said, if not the first blow in life, then the second. If not the second, then the third. Eventually, it is the blows in life that bring you onto the path. What is life about? That is the normal course of evolution. But sometimes, absurd as it may sound, there are people who have had tremendous blows, but they don't come onto the path. So, why don't they come onto the path? Not their destiny. They have to fulfill their karmic script. And if in their divine blueprint, it is written that the life will be one of unconscious suffering till the end, it will be. But that does not stop you. If the feeling is there to share a new dimension with such a person in your life, it does not stop you from expressing that. But you will now know that it is not my job to change this person's destiny course. I can just share a perspective. Whether they take it or not is God's will, you see. So while it is a noble intent to try and help someone not suffer like they are suffering, we have to be very careful because God really doesn't need us to rewire someone's destiny. We may simply be an instrument through whom a suggestion, a perspective emerges, which appeals to them. So things have to be done in a light way, gently, without you having an outcome invested in it.
Okay.
That is why Krishna says, out of millions, there are only thousands. Out of thousands, there are very few. And only one of those few knows me by name. That is the design of destiny. But I also see the opposite happening, that more and more people are inquiring about life, about the spiritual dimension. They are curious about it. I think it's both.
Okay.
And the best is to lead by example rather than telling someone. Lead by example by who you are. You know, if you have the quality of being very peaceful, people will be drawn to it. And they might just ask you, how are you so peaceful? What makes you so calm in the midst of life? It happens on its own.
Thanks.
There's a guy in the gym whom we have a very fun, I have a fun relationship with him, rubbing him a bit and all that, you know. So the other day, he walked in and I said, hi, and he said, hi, and he went some steps ahead and he came back. He said, oh, I forgot I was upset with you. You see, we have to meet life with a lightness. Because when we carry this weight about people, what they've done to me, what they've said to me, that weight is bogging us down. And then it really becomes an adventure. I mean, just try it. Someone who's really troubled you, be surprised yourself and them and just be there for them and say, what can I do for you? They'll be shocked. This obsession with self-preservation is what we have, knowing that we are going to die. We are wanting to preserve ourselves, knowing that we are going to die. Preserve ourselves means what? Our views, our opinions. I have a view of a political party and I get very upset when someone criticizes that party or that politician. Does it really matter? Do you also have that view in deep sleep? In deep sleep, your views are neutralized. So you may have a view, but then you have built a castle over it and you're sitting on the top of that. That is what we do. So what if someone has a counter view? So be it. In fact, that is the fun of life. Different perspectives. Does it really matter? If someone criticizes the dress you are wearing, why do you take it to heart? The dress is being criticized, not you. It is true. But the ego has identified with the dress. This is me. The dress has no problem, but the one wearing it has taken delivery of the criticism. That is why in this teaching, daily living is the sadhana. Because you are here to learn through daily living only. Each event, each feeling is your teacher. I would call this a Mahadurlabh Yoga because it's going to expose you. The ego is going to become naked You know, I've mentioned this before. I have a friend of mine from France, used to live in India for many years. What they would do, these guys, back home in France, if it was someone's birthday party, what he did on a couple of occasions was he would land up naked, ring the doorbell while the party was going on, and hold balloons or flowers in his hand, and then everyone would laugh and ha ha hoo hoo and all that. But I said, my God, to present yourself naked means you are not afraid of shame, judgment, nothing. I mean, for me, I said, this guy has arrived. Definitely, you know. And this was when I just met him and he used to tell me these incidents, and I realized by and by that he was really very far ahead, at least compared to me, in terms of his spiritual journey was concerned. So to stand naked means it's okay. You want to take my view from me? Take it. You want to say things to me? Say them. So be it. Thy will be done. I may or may not respond depending on how I feel, but now I am no longer working under compulsion like I used to. Compulsively react. It's gone. That's it. There's that thing they used to do. They would knock on your knee with that small hammer-like thing, and you know,
Yes,
you
yes.
would go like this. This is how we are. Someone touches here, we react. Touches here, we react. Touches here, we react. Any small thing pricks us, and the ego flares up. Ego flares up. That is the nature of the ego. Yes.
I was thinking what your friend came back and said hi to you. So that came from his pure, without mind hindrance.
Exactly.
He went ahead, then the mind chatter started,
The
brought back the
memory.
memory, right?
That
So
is the
that is
burden
how.
of memory. It was very funny.
So there is only one world and one consciousness.
Yes.
But often I will say in my world and your world, so the mind brings that division, what I
Yes.
perceive,
Yeah.
right?
Your world is based on your
Might,
genetics and
yes, yeah.
conditioning, but it's not really your world. It's just
Right.
your perspective of the world.
So eventually there is only one world and
Yes.
one consciousness.
Yes.
So that is.
Therefore, the real healer, if the real healer's consciousness is a healed consciousness, which I hope it is, they don't need to do anything to heal the other person because they know there's only one consciousness. It's a very important point. The true healer has a healed consciousness. Someone comes to this healer with an issue. So, because there's the knowing there's only one consciousness, the healer does not need to do something to that consciousness. In light of the healer's consciousness and knowing there's only one consciousness, the illusion dissolves. That is when healing takes place. So the healer knows doing is a part of the illusion because there's nobody to do nothing if there's only one consciousness. That is why when people used to go to sages or sadhus in the Himalayas, they would just come back healed. That mystic didn't have to do anything as such, but just be.
Just the presence.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's a beautiful quotation by a poet called Paul Eluard. He said, "There is another world, but it is this one." See, this is the Mrityu Lok. We get scared, but Mrityu Lok is to teach us about death only, death of me and mine. We are here in Mrityu Lok to learn about death, all kinds of death, not this collective view of, oh, the death of the body, body has to die. Because if we understand the layers of death while living, we are dying day by day. Then, when it actually comes to die, there's nobody left to die only because it's already dead. Because consciousness is living, functioning, breathing, acting through everyone, this whole riddle has been solved. Yes, there may be pain, physical pain of the death of the body, that is part of the process, no doubt. Who wants to die a painful death? But the understanding of death, the lessons on death have been learned. If the lessons on death have been learned, do you need to again learn them? So simple. It is not a punishment. The one source consciousness which knew no other could only know itself through multiplicity, which is why we are here. The day you realize, the day you can take two friends of yours, the one who has wronged you and the one who's loved you, and place them in front of you and accept them both as equal instruments of the divine, then you will know you have learned the lessons of death. It could be friends, it could be people, it could be siblings, it could be parents, it could be children. It is immaterial. They are all aspects of the one source consciousness. The day you take both the extremes together, the one who's thoroughly loved you and the one who's thoroughly harmed you, and view them as aspects of the one source consciousness, the lesson is learned.
And that is our sadhana. That it should be our sadhana to see.
It is the sadhana of someone who's on the spiritual path. Yeah. At least someone drawn to Advaita.
Yeah.
Someone may be drawn to a particular form of yoga which may or may not address this, though according to me, all addresses the same thing. Because yoga itself means to join.
Mind.
So that is everyone's sadhana. But as Ram Kumar said, sometimes one's life is living a life of suffering and ignorance, and there's no opening.
Even in our daily life, we see what we do very spontaneously. And minute the, even like giving, spontaneously you give something, but minute that mind comes and interferes, you hesitate.
Yes.
And you start bargaining with your own self.
Correct.
Justifying yourself. And that pure moment, what that giving is lost its charm.
Yeah.
And
your
so
first
many
thought,
things, yes.
The first thought is the thought to be
pure.
Followed.
Yeah.
You know, this is a sadhana which Vishuddhanand Parahamsa Deva used to suggest to his disciples. That whoever comes up to you in life, whether it is a beggar or someone with an ask, try and fulfill it to what you feel you should fulfill it. But don't let anyone go away empty-handed. Now, this is what I spoke about earlier, because then one's consciousness is imbued with giving. So even if a beggar comes, you give 5 rupees, 10 rupees, it is a consciousness of giving, which I think is what he was telling his disciples, to imbue the consciousness with that, rather than keeping, holding back, hoarding, because you can't take it with you. I know people who have crores in the bank, but they are so stingy. And I know people who are struggling to survive, who send me donations of 101 rupees when the guy does not have a job only, he sends. I know how much it must be pinching him. But yet that gratitude is so strong. So I rather appreciate 101 which comes from someone who does not have money than someone sends a big sum but has 5,000 times more that. Because that feeling of giving from the heart, that is the essence. So when we develop this quality of giving, and of course the intellect comes in, it must, because we are otherwise going to be lost in the Maya. That has to come in. That's why my teacher would say, trust in God but lock your car. You see, you have to be practical. You have to be practical.
Sure.
That's how we live our life. That is for the recording.
Yeah. Why is it difficult to accept life as a divine script when everything that is happening around feels so real?
You mean everything bad that is happening around, or what is
yes, it? Yes, like you were talking about people who have hurt us, and then it just feels so real. Or also when, as he mentioned, people who are suffering and we feel that we should do something for them, but it is also a part of the divine script, and maybe, I'm not sure, but maybe the ego also there wants to mend things for others. So I'm not sure, because I find it very difficult to accept life as it is a divine script.
Yes, so these are two things. One is, when I have an understanding of life, compassion will surely arise if I see someone suffering. And that compassion will make me want to do something for the person. But as my teacher used to explain it so beautifully, he says, When we accept the duality of life as it is, we no longer fight with life. So, for example, we might say, why did God create handicapped children? What harm have they done to anyone? That is the first thought when you see someone who's, differently abled. You feel so sad in the core of your being. But the understanding comes that we don't ask, why did God create healthy people? You see, we always focus on one aspect of consciousness. So we always say, why did God create poor people? We don't say, why did God create rich people? So these are showing how the dualistic mind functions. A total acceptance of the divine will includes everything. Now, once we understand this is the nature of life, it does not make us insensitive. If someone has money or is well enabled, they will feel for the other who does not have the money or who has a limitation. That is the beauty of life and living. And within my capacity to do what I can do, I do it, knowing I cannot guarantee the results. That is all. So I live my life like that. So I don't question God. Why did you make the world like this? You see, now there's talk of war and peace. Wars have been going on for centuries. Yet there are peaceful nations which have never fought. You see, so the balance is always maintained in the larger picture. But our focus goes on these aspects. That is how we are designed. So we meet life day by day. Certainly we feel bad. We are human beings. We are not cold. But all that we can do is what we are concerned with. That is all. So the enlightened being is not lost in this syndrome, and therefore they have not lost their peace. Theirs is a consciousness of harmony, accepting this wheel of fortune. The wheel is going to turn. That is the cycle of life, beginning with birth and death, beginning and ending, up and down, black and white, left and right, pleasure and pain. That is why the Buddha said samsara is dukkha, nirvana is shanti, and they are not two. They are not exclusive of each other. Peace is found through suffering, not away from it. So this concept of God is only, a just God will only have healthy people on the planet. There will be no poverty. That is a nice ideal to have. But the nature of duality proves otherwise, which does not mean it may not change. After all, we have the yugas, Satya Yuga, Kali Yuga, Treta Yuga, and so on. Evolution of consciousness happens all the time. When it is meant to change, when the Satya Yuga is meant to come, it will come. It's not that we have to force it to come. It's going to come on its own. That is the cycle of life. So rather than a consciousness of complaint towards God, a consciousness of acceptance, gratitude, and being available to meet life, whatever it brings in front of me from this point on, to meet that event or that person with a still mind, with a non-judgmental mind, which allows events and people to be the way they are, and thereafter sees what it can or feels like doing about the situation. See, if I am at peace, I will find the world is at peace. If I am in conflict, I will find the world is in conflict. As within, so without. So my journey begins and ends where I stand and where I sit. And the honest truth is, if my thinking mind has dissolved, no longer in the dead past, no longer in an imaginary future, then you could say that the consciousness of God is present. Where I stand is on holy ground means that when the presence and the power of God is within me, not God as some being, some deity which has come and descended into this body, pure being, pure consciousness, unstained by the egoic antics, is holy ground. We keep saying, God is my witness. God is the witness. We just have to realize that. Not a God up in heaven. The witness is God, and God is the witness. Sure.
So there are couple people
who presses your button, right?
They are?
They press your buttons.
How many people?
Couple.
That's it. You're blessed with a very good destiny.
So, as you mentioned, try to apply that, okay? It's the script. Whatever they are saying, however they are behaving, it is scripted. Of course, when they hurt us or hurt me or behave very in a mean way, it's quite painful. That time, tears come. Very deep sorrow is there. Then awareness comes that it's their script. How much should you come in contact with them, or is it okay to avoid them?
Firstly, it may be their script, but your feelings are yours. They have nothing to do with it. So all this hurt is not them doing anything to you as such.
Yeah, yeah.
It is
that's
all
my
inside
script.
You.
That's my script.
It is your script.
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, giving you an opportunity to release that hurt. You see?
Wow. Mm.
So this must be understood. Once it is resolved in your consciousness that it's really not them hurting me.
Mm.
You know, they may just be triggers for some childhood trauma which is embedded within me, which is waiting to come out and has been suppressed for so long.
Oh.
You see? So you might just turn around and say, God bless you, thank you. Unlikely though.
Yeah.
So once this is resolved in your consciousness, that they are just playing out their script doesn't mean as others doing things to me.
Hmm.
Reactions are mine, internalizations of mine, and these are just getting an opportunity to be exposed.
Okay.
Once it is seen in that light of clarity, once in your own consciousness it is resolved, this whole game, then you may decide that, okay, now that I have learned the lessons, understood the game, I may not want to subject myself to this person again and again.
Okay.
But if before that understanding you want to avoid people because they are hurting you and how much of hurt can you take, the job is not done.
Done, right.
The job is not done yet.
Yeah.
If that person still has the ability to take away your peace, that means the job is not done yet.
Done. Agreed.
Once that peace is reached, then by all means, you may feel, I prefer not being at the receiving end of this, but I wish this person well and I send them a silent blessing, so be it.
So two understanding. One is like, it is their script. As per their conditioning or whatever the runanuband, it is coming out from their side. And from my side, whatever the tendencies and whatever the emotions are lying within, they are coming out.
Yes.
And at the same time, to feel bad and sad and all that, that's my destiny. That's my script. So just see those two things.
The seeing is the only doing necessary.
Okay. Okay.
You know, and we can't force people to love us.
Yeah,
because when the Rinanubandhan is not there, it's not there.
Not there. Agreed. Okay. Thank you.
You spoke about...
I thought you all were going back to Dubai.
We're going finally this week. So you spoke about giving, being calm. These are the qualities. Now, sometimes giving or being calm or loving, it's not coming easily to you, right? Like, it's not coming.
Sure.
So then in that case, it's okay to, like, now that you know this, so it's okay to, like, even be that way despite it not being your whatever your nature is. That's okay, right? Like, the fact that if I'm not a very giving person, but yet I know this now, that giving is good. So even if it's not coming from my heart, but it's like, okay, it's good to give, you know, just give. Like, you know, fake it till you make it kind of a thing, game. Like, do you think that would be okay
accept that I am not the doer of my actions, I have to accept that I am not by nature giving. Now, supposing my life's experiences made me a miser.
Hmm.
You know, my parents didn't give me enough pocket money. Maybe life's experiences were such there was shortage of money when I was growing up, so I am a miser.
Hmm.
So when I accept I didn't make myself a miser, God did.
Okay.
I have absorbed myself of this label. My conditioning is to hoard, my conditioning is to be miserly. I can't help being miserly. So be it. Now I may come to a talk and I may hear that one's actual nature is to give because that's one's innate nature, all there is the one's self. But one has this hardwired conditioning behind one. Someone else may have the opposite conditioning and giving comes naturally.
Right.
So the one who has hardwired conditioning to hoard, it's going to take time. You see, and if it's meant to happen, it will happen. And it might be quite surprising. Because then that would mean a break in the conditioning. One fine day you realize, you see through it all, that you wanted to give something to someone, earlier it was not coming, now slowly, slowly it's coming. It's coming. Slowly, slowly, you see.
But do you like force? Like,
no,
do you
like everything must be honored. The ego wants to force things, so it wants to force itself to be a good person because a good person should be giving. Correct. That is the problem.
Correct.
In this teaching, there's no good and bad. Both are polar opposites of each other.
So it's to say that a person who's also like whatever, spiritually inclined, or if they've had experiences, it's okay, they can be the meanest person of all. Doesn't matter, right?
As long as you're okay with the consequences.
Right, right. Like, it's...
No, you're quite right. I have people who have told me, I can't help being a mean person. And I said, you're quite right. You can't help it because of your life's experiences till then.
Oh, that's your nature. That's how you were... That's your script, right?
Exactly.
Of being that mean
exactly.
or whatever person. And yet, you can be enlightened and yet you can live that nature here, right? That's what I want to understand.
That I'd like to invite you back for another satsang. An enlightened person will not be mean by nature.
Not mean, but, you know, like as you say, right, we all are wired differently, like we all are playing our script. But I've seen some people who have had experiences who've touched that dimension, yet it's not like they're the most loving and caring person. They are still living out the way their nature is.
That may be there, but... Even if they are mean, it would be just meanness in the moment and it would just dissolve like this. At the most, I would say. Just as a kind of past, slight trigger pattern. But by and large, no. By and large, no.
Like people, once you are spiritually inclined, you tend to like have these qualities that you just spoke about, right?
You tend to because, you know the story of Angulimala?
Yeah.
You know it? I'll tell you. Angulimala used to chop off people's fingers and put them around his neck. So Anguli means finger, mala means necklace.
Yeah.
Now someone told Angulimala about the Buddha. So he said, I'll chop his finger off also. So he went. But every time he tried to go up to the Buddha, Buddha was 10 paces ahead. He could not catch Buddha. So he got very frustrated. So he came and stood before Buddha and said, be still. So Buddha said, I will be still, but you be still also. And at that moment, his mind collapsed. Angulimala's mind collapsed. And he realized, what the hell have I been doing? Running around here, there, chopping off people's fingers and putting them on a necklace. So the miserly person may have that moment which smashes the old conditioning and this transformation happens, if it is their destiny. Other people, normal people, the meanness will reduce little by little. See, to be mean is to wish harm upon another, basically. So that quality starts getting eroded. It's not about morals or being nice. It's just kind of a natural reset which happens.
Be a little mean and still be okay.
It is absolutely okay because you have accepted that you have very little control on changing yourself also.
Like you said, ego flares up. The job of ego is to flare up.
Absolutely.
But only when you start witnessing, maybe that flare up will be lesser.
Yes, exactly.
But it will flare up.
So this is not an exam to pass. No one is being judged. That being judged a bad person or a good person. This is just exposing the polar opposites and the duality. But at the same time, it is giving a guideline to the ego that if your mind is disturbed, if you're in the dead past, imaginary future, if most of your relationships are unharmonious, then take a look at things again because yours is not a mind at peace. Then the qualities of peace are introduced, harmony, silence, equanimity. So that is how the teaching is just shining a light on life and life situations and showing that it is the dissolution of the thinking mind, which is the ego, which exposes this peace, which is our nature. So the mean person or the thief, as I say, when you know that the thief did not choose to be a thief, you don't know the thief's background. You don't know that young boy, whether his father taught him thievery, what lack there was. You don't judge the thief. You allow the thief to be. But yet you know that if he is caught, he will face consequences. Thy will be done. So this is not about rectifying people, correcting them and so on. It's just seeing that people are who they are based on their circumstances and their nature, and allowing the divine to let any kind of transformation happen.
Thank you.
Sorry, is there time to take? It's not, then it's okay.
Did you want to?
No, go ahead. So actually my question is far away from meanness and people. It's about dreams and visions. And I have been seeing a person repeatedly in my dreams, and there were messages for this person, but I don't have the courage to go and tell the person what I've seen or what was the message. I didn't have the courage, but he keeps coming in my dreams, so I don't know. And it's kind of bothering me now because I do see him in the gym, and I don't know whether I should go, not go, whether I'll be judged, whether how will the person take it. But then I said, there's one part of me says, before 2025 ends, just convey the message. And then a part of me says, he's going to think I'm a lunatic because how is this girl having visions about me? So I'm a bit like...
So be it. We are all lunatics here. Welcome to the club.
So why is this person coming in my dreams? Any idea?
I have no idea. But if you feel driven to deliver a message, just keep one thing in mind. Mm-hmm. It is not me delivering the message.
Okay.
I am an instrument through whom the message is being delivered.
Mm-hmm.
So then I am prepared to accept the consequences. What is the worst case scenario? They'll stop talking to you? That's the worst, right?
Yeah.
Are you afraid that something else can happen?
No, nothing else.
So be it. There are so many of us. Come and talk to all of us. One person less to talk to might be doing you a favor. Unless you want that person keeps talking to you.
No.
You see.
No. The person doesn't talk to me. There's just a hi-bye thing. That's it. It's not like...
So then what is there to lose?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a cherished friendship?
No. It was a natural friendship, but then it kind of faded away on its own and it took its natural course and I was okay with that.
So are you convinced you have a message from the divine to give to this person, or is it perhaps your own mind wanting to say something to them?
No, there is clearly a message.
Then I would say that go ahead.
Okay.
Don't be afraid to be judged.
Okay.
Who is judging whom? If he is judging you, which is a supposition, so be it. Okay. Just tell yourself he's judging God.
Okay.
Why take delivery of it?
Okay. Because I've had visions for people in the past and there have been clear messages. And whenever I've conveyed, they've said, oh, Bhavna, this makes... Not that I'm, again saying, not that I'm the doer. It would come and then I would deliver and they would be, oh my God, how did you know this? Or, oh wow, this information... in fact, it happened with Kajal Bua as well and she was wondering. And I was wondering, why would I see this vision? And I instantly communicated with her and she could join the dots.
So maybe that's your role to play. But I can understand if the guy is good looking and well built and all, you're like, don't want a situation where he doesn't talk to you anymore. That's a problem.
So
I would not think too hard about
it. Okay.
If you feel you're driven to do this work and it's helping others, why? What's the problem?
Okay.
When my mother released her drawings of her spiritual experience, she was told, people will think you've gone mad. So she had to take a call. Do I still prefer sharing them so that they can shed light on other people's experiences? And it's okay to be called mad. She took the decision. I don't mind being called mad. So you have to take the decision.
Okay.
But...
Mm-hmm. The same thing comes...
What does it matter here?
The same thing comes with my writing as well. I've started writing, and a lot of my writing is very sensitive. It's very something very deep, and I'm always afraid, oof, if I post this, you know, then what?
So that is the doer. Okay. The doer is the one who's afraid.
But the thoughts come naturally. They come very naturally.
So like because you feel you are doing it, you are afraid. If you actually felt you were not doing it and it was natural, you would not feel this burden.
Okay. They actually come like downloads.
Well, then thoughts. You would not feel this. You've taken delivery of the download and think it's me, and that is why you're worried about the repercussions.
Okay. So just deliver without being afraid of being judged and the repercussions.
Yeah.
Just deliver for the...
You know, when my teacher passed away, his last words to me were, when people come to you, that time only I laughed because nobody was coming to me at that time. He said, when people come to you, remember one thing. They don't come to see a me. That was his last sentence to me. They are not coming to see me as a person. They are coming because the divine in them has resonated with some part of this message and is drawn to it. The person is not really concerned.
Okay.
So this concern is when there's doership, okay, and the me feels it is doing something.
Okay.
And therefore does not want to be judged. If it was a direct divine download, you would not care. You know you have a role to play and you would play that role.
Maybe I'm discovering that role.
That was what Jesus did. He was judged. Forget judged, he was crucified. Yeah, crucified. Here, I don't think this guy is going to crucify you.
It's not about the guy. About the guy. It's actually, yeah. Anyway,
so let us know what happens.
Yeah, I don't think I'm...
We're all curious.
I don't think I'm going to have the courage. Anyway, I need a lot of courage, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Jesus made it a bit light. Yeah, sorry.